Hi, welcome back. I'm Jamie Waxman, and this is Playgirls Sex Pod, and I'm becoming more frequent than I once was, and although, you know that saying, better late than pregnant, unless I guess you're trying to get pregnant, I'm not that late in coming up with a new podcast, am I? Anyway, this is Playgirls Sex Pod. I am Jamie Waxman. You can check out playgirltv.com for more information on watching some really hot couples porn. In fact, Playgirl is, it's everywhere now. I was just online, and there's a great site out of Canada that, of course, now the name's going to evade me. The Feminist Porn Awards were at
Goodforher.com.
Thank you. That's my guest. I have a guest today, so that's even more exciting. And they're very excited to announce that they are now carrying Playgirl videos because really production values are high and actors are hot. And that's two good reasons to watch Playgirl TV. And if you have cable TV and you go to your pay-per-view or video on demand section, you'll see for women or for couples, and that's what you need to click to find Playgirl TV. Okay, that's my commercial for the day. So now it's very exciting. This doesn't happen to me very often, although it should happen more, that I have a guest in studio. And what I mean by in studio is in my bedroom, which might make you very, very jealous. And her name is Audacia Ray, and you probably know who she is. If you don't, I don't know what internet shell you've been hiding under, but it's time to crawl out. She is so many things. She has her own website, wakingvixen.com. If you need to spell that, that's WAKINGVIXEN.com. She's a sex blogger, a writer, a researcher, a woman with a master's, there's a lot of other things that I'm not saying about her right now, an editor of a major magazine, Spread Magazine, an author, a published author, a pornographer, director, producer. This woman has done a lot in a very short amount of time on the planet. Her latest project is a book called Naked on the Internet, the subtitle, Hookups, Downloads, and Cashing In on Internet Sexploration. That's a very important word there, sexploration. She has produced, directed, and wrote a film called The Buy Apple, which is distributed by Adam and Eve, and just won another award at goodforher.com at the Feminist Porn Awards for Best Sex Scene, I believe.
Hottest Bisexual.
You know, online it says Best Sex Scene, I'm pretty sure, which is actually a really cool award, too. You should check that out. Here is Miss Audacia Ray. I am Jamie Waxman, and I'm just going to get to the questions. So, Audacia, you wrote a book about internet sexploration, and there's so many obviously ways to explore your sexuality online. This is a book about women online, but my first question to you is, what's the difference between how men and women surf for sex online, and is there a difference on how men and women are using the internet for sex?
I think that's something that's shifting a lot. Basically, you know, to sort of parallel real life interactions or offline interactions, men tend to be the aggressors online, and women tend not to be, though that's starting to change a lot. And basically, women tend to be a little bit more selective than men online, because the idea that, you know, it's really hard for a man to hook up with someone, especially, you know, for casual sex online, is definitely true. And women kind of have their pick of the litter. They can choose whoever they want as far as dating and hookups goes. So women tend to be much more particular about what they're looking for and really research what they're looking for a lot more heavily. And I think part of that is just the way that women are learning to access sexual culture and media is a relatively new thing for women to be doing. So they tend to be very meticulous about it.
So you're talking mostly about, we're sharing a microphone, by the way, right now. So it's really interesting because we're just getting very intimate here. So you're talking mainly about how women use the internet for picking up sex. But what about in other ways as well? Like, because a lot of your book deals with sex work. So women are online also making, you know, sex making money off of sex. And do you think that women and men are using the internet differently there as well? Or is that more of a kind of equal playing field?
I don't think that's an equal playing field at all. And that's because women tend to make money from sex on the internet and men tend to spend money on sex on the internet. So it's a very, you know, two totally different experiences of using the online media.
And where do you think most women who... Do you think it's... I mean, I think the answer is probably in online dating. But when women go online to do something with sex, related to sex, is it mostly an online dating thing? Do you think most women are there? Or do you think a lot of women are posting pictures of themselves, looking at other pictures? What sort of... You know, Playgirl is a very... Since we're doing this for PlaygirlTV.com, Playgirl is a very visual medium. Do you think that a lot of women are using the internet for that visual medium, or is it more for the online dating medium, or are they combined?
I think that's true, but I think more than either of those things, I think the number one thing that women do on the internet is look for health information. 80% of people who use the internet use it to search for health information, not all the time, but at some point. And especially women look for information about their bodies and about any, you know, condition they might have or something they're curious about. So that's actually the number one thing that women do on the internet.
Well, how accurate do you think the information they get online is? Because you can just post anything you want and call it fact.
Well, I mean, that's a big challenge. Another kind of statistic to throw out there is that 70% of the people who look at health information on the internet don't check where it comes from. And, you know, they don't check the dates or who wrote it or, you know, what company produced it, if it was produced by a drug company or anything like that. So a lot of that information is very shaky. There are, you know, a couple of big major websites that tend to be more reliable, like WebMD is one of the biggest websites that people use for health information. But, you know, for women's health, like the ones that tend to be the best are actually ones for teenagers. But Planned Parenthood has a lot of really excellent sexual health information. Their teen site to that is TeenWire. And there's also Scarlet Teen, which is, you know, really incredible wealth of information. And those tend to have much more accurate sources of information. But yeah, you can really Google the same thing and get six different answers to it, which is why it's important to not only, you know, look for information online, but also try to corroborate it with real life information from a doctor.
Well, there's two things. Good. So you brought up a couple of links. There was TeenWire and ScarletTeen.com. Are there any other health sites that you really recommend or stand behind is number one. And number two, what is the most incredulous piece of information, if you can remember, during your research? And I want to talk to you a little bit more after that about the research you did for the book Naked on the Internet, which is available everywhere online. It's a Seal Press book, and it's been out for a little under a month right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other sites that you recommend or any information on the opposite end that was so out there that you can't believe it's actually still online?
I can't remember the names of the sites offhand, but there are a lot of sites that deal with abortion that tend to be really kind of scary because there are a lot of sites that pose as support networks for women who have had abortions. But it's only like once you start digging into them that you realize that they don't have a very positive view of women who've had abortions. So they tend to be kind of actually tricky and kind of dupe women into, you know, like presenting certain kind of information that is usually basically false. And, you know, preying on women who are in difficult emotional spaces. So abortion is definitely a place where that happens a lot. And that's, you know, especially the abortion recovery sites. Because, you know, regardless of your standpoint on abortion, like if you've had an abortion, most women do feel like they need a little bit of aftercare after the situation has happened and everything. And sometimes you can get good support for that on the internet, and sometimes you can get into really ugly spaces where people are not going to be supportive or are going to basically tell you that you're wrong and evil for doing that.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. I was just looking up some information on the HPV vaccine, mm-hmm. and I went to Jewett Dishel Watch, and I was thinking, okay, I can't find anything about this site, I didn't really dig that deep at the time. And then I went to the homepage almost, and it said, we are a conservative think tank. And I said, oh, okay, I don't even need to read anymore. I've got the agenda down pat, and I understand why they're reporting on this angle. So I think that's really important for anyone who goes online anywhere to kind of remember, is that everyone who sort of has a site or a page has an agenda, whether it be a personal agenda or a public agenda, and that it's really important to take everything with a grain of salt. Even, I mean, a Planned Parenthood, where I like the information, if you're coming from a really conservative family, you take it as this, well, it's this liberal place, but you know, right. There's something everywhere. But let's backtrack a little bit more, actually. You, for people who don't know who Audacia Rae is, what was your impetus, your reasons for writing Naked on the Internet?
Naked on the Internet is basically about communities that I come out of. So that's one of the really important things about this book, is that I'm not an outside researcher coming in and you know, and like kind of looking around at the internet. That I've spent a couple years on the internet, not doing research, but doing my own thing. You know, I've been a sex blogger. I've been an alt porn model. I've modeled nude on lots of websites. I've used the internet to advertise for sex work that I've done. Like, you know, I spent a couple years doing sensual massage, so I use the internet that way. And I've also used the internet to date and to do hookups. So, you know, I've really sort of been all over the map with the internet. So, in a way, although this book is not my personal story, it kind of is. And one of the things that I say towards the end of the book, not to give away the ending, is just that, you know, when I first started telling people that I was writing this book, people would assume that it was about me. And as it turned out, you know, as I interviewed all these women, I talked to over 80 women, it became clear that I didn't actually need to really write my own personal story, because lots of women were doing that. And it sort of felt like my personal story, even though I was telling other women's stories, because so many women are having these experiences online.
Do you think the women who are having the experiences online, the positive or just the kind of the experiences that they don't regret, I guess, are kind of feeling the same way about their experiences? Like, did you find that there was this overall general camaraderie, yeah, we did this, it was great, I learned something sort of thing? Or do you think that there's a really big disconnect, that some women really regret what they've done and other women really embrace it?
I don't think that it's as polar as that. I mean, I've definitely done things that I've regretted on the internet. And so lots of the women that I talked to, so most of the women that I talked to had kind of a mixed bag of experiences. And the camaraderie came out of being able to discuss that and not being judged, because, you know, one of the things that happens whenever someone admits that they've had a bad experience with the internet, there's sort of this, well, I told you so thing that happens, especially in the mainstream media. So I feel like it's really important to you know, have a space and do what I try to do in the book, which is to show where the good and bad can kind of overlap. And that's super important, because that's really human experience, that, you know, it's not always awesome and it's not always terrible, and it's sort of a mix of both.
When you say that there are things that you regret, what kind of things do you regret?
Well, one of the things that I did when I was first online and first doing my sex blog is that I really wrote about everything. And I, you know, I wrote really personal stuff about my relationships and my sex life. And I don't really regret writing the stuff about my sex life, but it's more, you know, I wrote really intimate stuff about the relationships I was having, really without the consent of my partners at all. And at the time, like, I really didn't think about them. I just did what I felt like I needed to do and wrote what I needed to express. But later I realized that that act of writing actually really damaged my relationships, because in a lot of cases, instead of talking to my partners about what was going on, I would just go and blog about it. And that's not a very healthy way of communicating, because I wasn't communicating with them. I was communicating to my blog and my invisible audience. So that was sort of the
pitfall. Were they reading the blog that you were communicating on? Like, so even though you weren't, were they getting right. The picture in some way?
No. Well, what I'm talking about, I had a boyfriend that I dated for 2 years and a girlfriend that I dated for like 8 months, and they overlapped, you know, they knew about each other and everything. She read the blog and she would comment, and I know she had a blog and I would comment on hers. So there was that like weird internet relationship that we talked more online about our problems than we talked in person. My boyfriend did not read the blog until after we broke up. And so he had a very different understanding of our relationship while it was going on than he did afterwards.
Oh, that's totally intense. Well, no, that brings me, I mean, I feel like I started blogging in 2002 or 2003. I mean, which now seems fairly early on, you know, considering mm-hmm. the rise and success of so many sex blogs since then. And when I started, it wasn't a sex blog. It was across the country, and I'm going to just tell everyone what I'm doing without having to talk to them. But what do you think? I mean, I feel like it's amazing that, you know, the rise of blogs and the amount of information, personal information that's out there right now. And do you see, I mean, what do you see the future of this becoming? Because I kind of feel like there's got to be a point where it caps off to this tremendous extent and then kind of explodes and then there's nothing again. Mm. And I don't know, do you feel like sex blogs have taken themselves to a level where eventually no one's going to care about what people are having, what kind of sex people are having, or it will always be there because there's always going to be voyeurs and exhibitionists?
I don't think sex blogs are going to go away. Actually, like maybe 6 months or so ago, there was this article that was published in a Las Vegas weekly paper that was about, you know, the death of the blog. And I was sort of name dropped in the article, so that's why I know about it. But and, you know, the whole thing was that, like, blogs are going to go away because we have YouTube, you know, so you can upload videos, and we have podcasts. And, you know, no one's going to care about words on the screen when you have video and audio. And I think for sex blogs, that's not true, because a lot of sex blogs are actually done in secret. And it's much harder to keep a podcasting or video blogging habit secret because you need equipment for it. So, you know, there's that. But I also think that the people have very intimate relationships with writing, and that writing is really important and powerful for people. And the other thing is that sex blogs tend to be kind of short-lived. There are a couple who have been happening for a few years, but unlike other blogs that are like part of a, you know, bigger picture of someone's life, sex blogs tend to focus on just sex. So they usually get started for a reason. You know, the writer is like figuring something out, or, you know, going through something with a relationship or whatever. And then when that sort of resolves itself, sometimes the sex blog disappears. So there's always going to be someone going through something and that they want to write about. And there's always going to be new people discovering those different blogs. So I think, you know, those cycles are short cycles, but they're always going to be people rediscovering blogging, or, you know, discovering blogging for the first time from either the writing or reading perspective. So although, you know, people can make fun of sex blogs as being, you know, too much information and all that kind of stuff, I really don't think they're going to go away or dry up.
And I kind of feel like this is how I feel about working in radio or TV or whatever. If you don't like what you're reading, like, turn, you know, on, you know, click yeah. away. You don't have to be there or whatever. Now, you wrote this book over a course of, that's a very strange noise. I think you can hear it in here, but you wrote this book over a course of, you know, what, 6 months, a year, about
6 months. Yeah.
What it's, you get a lot of information in that time. You know, I mean, you're dealing with, there's a chapter on blogging, there's a chapter on webcamming, a chapter on sex work, online dating, cyber dildonics, which we'll explain what that is in just a minute. You have a lot of different stuff in here. Well, what was the most challenging part of the book for you? What was the most challenging part to write, and why?
The most challenging part was actually the first chapter, because I wrote about kind of like the prehistory of internet and women and computers and stuff like that. And it was a history that I wasn't super familiar with. And also, one of the things that's sort of interesting about this book, or interesting to me anyway, is that I'm not a tech person. That I'm not writing this book from the perspective of someone who actually knows how the internet works. I'm interested in the social dimensions of it. I cannot design and code a website. So in trying to explain basic stuff about how the internet works, I had to learn a whole lot that I just absolutely didn't know. And I think, you know, in some ways it sort of gives me an advantage, because I'm not using really heavily technical jargon because I don't know it. But it was also really challenging to do all that research for the first chapter, whereas all the other chapters were things that I was sort of already involved in. So a lot of the research was already like in my blog lines, already part of the blogs I read or the sites that I visit. So that came a little bit more naturally.
If you did a Naked on the Internet part two, would there be another chapter that you would add?
I don't think so.
No, I think it's pretty thorough. Now, let's go into the future a little bit of the internet. I mean, I think cyber dildonics is a part of that future. I don't necessarily think it's there yet, but that it's a part of the future. What can you go into a little bit of detail about what cyberdildonics are and how they're being used now and how things are moving forward? Is this the future of sex work online even?
Well, cyberdildonics are basically dildos with lots of wires hanging out of them that you can control from a distance. So it gives you the ability to have, you know, remote sex that you could have from the next room or from across the country, across the world. You know, one person sits at their computer and the other person is, you know, doing whatever they do with their cyber dildo. So that's sort of the basic idea of what cyberdildonics are is. I mean, one of the things that mainstream media writes about a lot is, you know, the future of sex. And really, whenever someone brings that up, like, I want to throw up. Because I just feel like imagining the future is sort of a silly exercise. the thing about cyberdildonics is that people are afraid of machines. They also think machines are sexy. So that's the whole idea about cyberdildonics is scary, sexy. So people really want to be able to use machines to fuck each other across the world, but at the same time, they're afraid that machines are going to replace them entirely. And I think that is just crazy, that the internet and cyberdildonics are tools that people have created to make their lives easier, and they will always be tools. They're not going to, like, you know, raise up into an army and, you know, take over the world.
Well, have you ever seen Battlestar Galactica? Don't
say I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I just think that people should use these tools and toys for what they are and love them for that. But people are always going to be an important element.
Well, there's the affection and attention. I mean, yeah. And that's, you can get that maybe online with a webcam. You can get the attention, but the affection, you know, the touch, the human touch is still something that nothing online can give you. It can introduce you to other people who will give it to you. I want to switch gears for a second before we wrap up. Again, Audacia Ray is my guest. WakingVixen.com is her website. She is going to be touring the country. She'll be in Philadelphia next week, San Francisco in July. Where else? Are you going to L.A.?
Yep.
L.A. in July as well? Or?
Yes.
Okay. Out in the West Coast, all in the summer months. You can check out her schedule at WakingVixen.com. Her book, Amazon.com, great place to buy it. Naked on the Internet. You cannot forget the title. And once you see the cover, you will not forget the cover either. And it's an actual model, I heard you say or read somewhere.
Yeah, the cover photo is actually the ass of a woman who I interviewed for the book. And it has binary code that's projected on it. And it's actually...
Did you say whose ass ever?
Yeah, it's Analog from nerdprawn.com. And it's her actual ass, and it's actually part of a photo set that she used on her porn site.
I also like that you call yourself on the back of the book an all-around sexy nerd, or someone calls you that. It's very true. It's very true. I have a question for you about your porn, actually. Your adult erotica. I'm trying to get away from the word.
Sometimes. I like the word porn.
I do too. I go back and forth. You decided to make a bisexual movie, and I think this is a very interesting choice because I don't think there's a lot of bi movies out there. The movie happens to be called The Bi Apple, which is a great name, and it's filmed entirely on location in New York City. What made you decide to go for a bisexual audience over, say, you know, just doing some straight hetero or even gay porn?
The reason is basically a selfish one. I'm bisexual, and I like watching guys get it on, and I like watching girls get it on, and girls and guys, and all that. I guess I would say I'm more pansexual, whatever. Point being, I like to see people do it, and there's not a lot of porn out in the world that I like to watch that has the thorough mix of different activities that I like to see, so I did it myself. I decided to make it on my own.
I think that's the best way to do it.
So, yeah, I mean, basically, like, I saw a need for that because it's something that I want to see, and I assumed, hoped that other people want to see it too, and I've proven that that's right because it's actually now a bestseller with Adam and Eve, and it won the Best Bisexual Scene at the Feminist Porn Awards in Toronto, so other people agree with me.
No, it's a totally hot movie, The Bi Apple. Rent it, or... Can you download it anywhere, video on demand that you
Yeah, have? You can video on demand it.
Okay,
yep.
So you'll find it online. Just Google it or whatever search engine you use that's not a verb. What's my last question to you is basically, and well, no, yeah, this will be my last question to you. What are your future plans? Do you have future plans, or right now you're really just focused on the book? And do you have what are your goals for? I mean, you've done so much in so little time. What's next?
I don't really know what's next, honestly. I mean, I'm doing another month and a half of book tour stuff, and you know, I'm just trying to grow my freelance writing career a bit more. I have a couple of ideas for future books. I have some ideas for future porn movies, so I'm gonna kind of see where it takes me. I mean, I feel like I really worked my ass off for the last couple of years, so I'm gonna try to see where that goes over the next few months, and then sort of reevaluate. I also would like to take a vacation.
Vacations are very important. That's all I will say on the subject. Well, thank you so much for sitting here with me in my bedroom and very up close and personal. Audacia Ray, again, wakingvixen.com is the site. The book is Naked on the Internet. I can't say that slower or more clear. Naked on the Internet. It's Seal Press. The movie is The Buy Apple. Is there anything else you want to promote that I'm forgetting?
Nope.
All right, well, you should check it all out. Really, honestly, I will say this about the book. The introduction is amazingly written and super personal, and the rest of the book is so thorough, well-written, and researched. You will learn more than 20 things if you read this book. A personal guarantee, I promise. I'm Jamie Waxman. This is Playgirls Sex Pod. Thank you for listening, and remember to come again and again. And naked on the internet, the Buy Apple, again.